Unlike you, Mr. White, I continued, I don't dare to dream. My dark skin, ample girth, and coarse hair dictate that no matter how talented I am, my options are few. I wish I could change that. I pray that one day it will change. But in the meantime, much like my ancestors who toiled in the fields, I take the craps I'm giving and make the most marvelous supper I can. I give a dignified performance that opens doors so that Negro actors of tomorrow can be all the things you think they should be, but America has not yet given us. So I make no apologies that I don't fit your standard of beauty. But this, I motioned up and down my body, is beautiful to me. It's the body, the face, the skin color that God gave me. I've been researching her for 3 years, and I felt like she was like, tell my story. And Hattie McDaniel has a quote that says, I'd rather play a maid for $700 than be a maid for $7.
Hello, and welcome to History Through Fiction, the podcast. I'm your host, Colin Mustful, and today I am delighted to be joined by Rashonda Tate, author of the novel, The Queen of Sugar Hill.
That's one of the things I love about historical fiction, is all of the people saying, I had no idea.
Rashonda Tate writes both adult and teen fiction, as well as nonfiction. A highly sought-after motivational speaker and award-winning poet, Rashonda is the recipient of the NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literature for her book, Say Amen Again, and was also nominated for her books, Mama's Boy and The Secret She Kept. She has received a plethora of distinguished honors and awards for her journalism, fiction, and poetry writing skills, including an induction into the Arkansas Black Hall of Fame and a Texas Top Author Honor. Considered one of the top African-American authors in the country, her books remain a staple on bestsellers lists and have been featured in USA Today, The Washington Post, Jet, People, Essence, and Ebony magazines. Today, I'll be talking with Rashonda about her new novel, The Queen of Sugar Hill. I wonder if you could just start by telling us, who is the Queen of Sugar Hill, Hattie McDaniel?
Hattie McDaniel was the first Black person, not just woman, but first Black person to win an Academy Award. She won for Best Supporting Actress for her role as Mammy in the classic Gone with the Wind, and she won the award in 1940.
And can you provide us with a little bit of context for what that meant to have that achievement at that time?
You know, just to tell you how big of an achievement this is, they had never had a Black person attend the Academy Awards other than the wait staff or janitors. And so Hattie won this award after convincing the producer, David O. Selznick, to nominate her. She not only won, but then she was in attendance. Now, he had to pull some strings to get her allowed in the auditorium because there was a no colored persons allowed in that hotel. So he pulled strings, he fought hard. She was there. She was seated in the very back of the room, but she was there. And that was monumental because it opened the door. It was the first time an awardee, an honoree of color was allowed there.
And I think we kind of view this automatically as a great achievement, as something that shows progress that had been made. But it also showed all the progress that hadn't been made. Can you talk about the controversy that rose up because of her win and that dichotomy between making progress and lacking progress?
Yes. You know, she thought that the win would open doors for her, but it did not. You know, actually, it made her life a little harder because while it did benefit her financially, The Black community was, they did not like it. The NAACP waged an all-out campaign against her because they felt the Mammy character was stereotypical and degrading to Black people. But those were the only roles she was allowed to play. So she had to deal with the Black community who didn't like her. And then the white community felt like Mammy was too sassy. A lot of people today like Mammy, but at the time they did not. So she found herself walking this fine line, and then she couldn't get other roles. You know, she did a great job in Gone with the Wind, but the only roles that they allowed her to play were servants and slaves. So every movie after that, she had to continue playing a servant and slave. So it didn't catapult her up, but it did open the door to the dialogue, to getting the mainstream producers to see that talented actors, Black actors, could be on camera. So she did pave the way, but at the time it was very challenging for her.
And what inspired you to look into Hattie's story and to tell it through this novel?
So I've loved Hattie McDaniel for years, but it wasn't always that way. When I first saw Gone with the Wind with my grandmother, who loved the movie, I actually was disgusted at the sight of Hattie McDaniel. And my grandmother talked to me about it and said, well, why do you have such a vitriol reaction? And I said, look at how she's acting. She's a maid and she's, you know, acting all stereotypical. And my grandmother said, well, what's wrong with being a maid? I'm a maid and I've given you guys a good life. Number one. Number two, what would you like her to play? Should she have been Scarlett O'Hara? Do you think that would have gone? And that kind of was eye-opening for me. And my grandmother explained then she was playing the roles that she could. And Hattie McDaniel has a quote that says, I'd rather play a maid for $700 than be a maid for $7. And when I saw that, I said, you know what? That is so right. And that just made me want to look into her a lot more. Over the years, I kind of sidetracked, put it up to the side and did a mainstream fiction, but she kept talking to me. And eventually I said, I need to tell her story.
So we've talked a little bit about her professional life, but the novel also deals a lot with her personal life. So what were some of the challenges going on in her personal life?
Yes, she did. She was very unlucky in love. She'd grown up very, very poor. Her family was rich in love, but they were very poor. So she had this hunger to succeed. And she attracted men that unfortunately just kind of got on her coattail with the success that she had. And she had she was unlucky in love four times. She had four different husbands. And so that took a toll on her, her inability to have children. She actually had a false pregnancy. She thought she was pregnant for months and she carried herself. She decorated her nursery only to find out that she wasn't really pregnant. And that just crushed her because she loved children. And then, you know, there was her her neighbor. She moved into the West Adams district, which became known as Sugar Hill. And her neighbor sued because they cited restrictive covenants saying that Black people were not allowed to move into this neighborhood based on restrictive covenants, which were tenants that kept people of color out of neighborhoods. And so she sued. She joined a lawsuit. She became the voice and the face. And that lawsuit went all the way to the Supreme Court. So, you know, she had so much going on in her life and a lot of down things that just kept her down. So she just fought through it all and persevered in spite of.
Well, you bring up the, you know, that that court case. Is that related at all to when she moved into Sugar Hill? Can you talk about what that community was and what happened when she moved there?
Yes. So the Sugar Hill was called the West Adams District. And at the time, it was mansions. It was a lot of celebrities that lived there. And the white people in the neighborhood sued. Now, Hattie McDaniel paid $10,000 above asking costs for her home. It was a beautiful home. And her neighbors sued, citing the restrictive covenants. And the restrictive covenants said that only white people, people with pure European blood, could live in this neighborhood. And everyone agreed to only sell to white people. Well, whoever sold Hattie her home, by that point, the Depression had just come. They just wanted to get rid of it. So they sold. But they managed to keep some people out by suing with restrictive covenants. But Hattie said no. She had worked hard to get where she was, and she got Lawrence Smith on board, and they sued, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court.
You talked already a little bit about your change in viewpoint after seeing Mammy on screen and then talking to your grandmother. I'm curious, after spending so much time with Hattie in order to write this novel, How has your perception of her changed, and do you feel any connection to her at all?
I do. My mother says I need to stop telling people this because I sound like I'm crazy, but you know, that's how us writers do. But I feel like she talks to me. I went to her home after I've been researching her. I've been researching her for 3 years, and I felt like she was like, tell my story. And so I now have just a completely different view of her. What I realized is we often look at the mammies and these type of characters through a 21st century lens. And so that's the message that I'm really trying to get people to see, is to take off that 21st century lens and realize that she was playing the roles that she was allowed to play during that time. And so that was really the most insightful thing. The other things were just all the things I discovered about her. I did discover the internet is not to be trusted. There is so much wrong. And when you just Google someone, you cannot do historical fiction that way. There's so much erroneous information on the internet. So I went to research libraries. I scanned census records, trying to get to the truth and the essence of who she was.
Well, and we've talked a lot about that truth and the history involved in this, but it is a novel. So tell me more about the craft of historical fiction and how you took all that information and made it into a fictional narrative about Hattie.
That's one of the things that I love. So I'm a journalist by trade. So I was able to do the research, which is the facts, and that is the foundation of the story. So all of the foundation is, those are facts. Those are true things that happened. That's the historical part. And then the fiction comes in, and we don't know how some of these true events played out exactly. So the fiction comes in on that. For example, the cast of Gone with the Wind went to a nightclub after they won the awards, and Hattie was denied entry. So that's the fact that we know. What we don't know is what the bouncer at the front of the door, what he said. We don't know her real feelings. We can imagine how she felt, but those are the fictional things that comes in. So for me, it's a blending of both worlds, my journalism world and my novelist world. And that's a perfect match for me.
And what do you think the value is to readers that want to know more about Hattie? That pick up your book, what is the value of being able to fill in those gaps through historical fiction?
It is really just an eye-opening experience. We know a few years ago, there was a campaign to discredit the Gone with the Wind. And I was one of those. I was like, get rid of the movie, but I understand it. And I don't want to erase history, the good, the bad, and the ugly of our history. And, you know, one of the things that Hattie really wanted is she wanted people to understand she was a working actor. And she said, and this still holds true today, especially in the Black community, Black actors are not allowed to be versatile. She said no one looks at someone that plays a silly character, a Lucille Ball, for example, during her time, and makes it an indictment of the entire race. But her comedic characters, her doing the same thing that Lucille Ball would do, was an indictment on the whole race. And she was judged and put on this platform that you're making all Black people look bad. And that was a burden that she carried. She hated that. And she just wanted to work. And I hope that when people read this book and they see her challenges and her persevering through, they'll get a better understanding of that.
And of course, we're still grappling with a lot of the issues that Hattie faced 80 years ago. And so a lot of this is still relevant for us for today. What do you think, what kind of progress has been made, and how does this open our eyes to the progress that still needs to be made?
Yeah, you know, it is slow progress. Even if you look at when the next Black woman won an Academy Award, it wasn't until the 90s with Whoopi Goldberg. So that's 50 years that there was no progress in terms of Black women being recognized. There's still minimal progress. There is some. And so one of the things that I hope that this does is it shines a light on how far we've come, but how far we've yet to go. And so those doors were opened by Hattie McDaniel, and you've had the actors come along, the Halle Berrys, the Jennifer Hudsons, Regina King, that have been nominated and tried to follow in Hattie's footsteps. And it's just a slow road, but we're chugging along nonetheless.
Well, we've talked a lot about Hattie and about your novel, but let's talk about you. I read that you've written 53 books. How do you keep up? How do you do all that?
Yes. Yeah, so I used to write mainstream fiction. I used to. I love historical fiction. That's where I plan to stay now. But I also wrote for teens. So that's included in that 53. And teen books come out a lot faster. So I would do two teen books a year. I have two lines of books for teenagers that I love, and the kids love them. Well, they're not kids anymore. They read my adult books now, make me feel old. But that's how I'm able to get all it done. And then I have a couple of nonfiction books. But I've been writing for over 20 years. I love it. I write for a living as a journalist, but I love to be able to lose myself in the fiction at night. And now the historical fiction allows me to do both.
And when did you first discover, both your interest and your talent for writing and storytelling?
Oh my gosh. So I was in the fifth grade and I wrote a What I Did on Summer Vacation essay. And I wrote how I grew up in the ghetto and I was witness to drive-by shootings and elderly ladies getting mugged and just how difficult life was. And my teacher was moved. She called my mom and said, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know. And my mother said, ghetto? Drive-bys, what are you talking about? We live in the suburbs. And my teacher said, well, why did you write that? And I said, well, I don't know. I went to summer camp and this story just sounded so much better. And so it was then that they explained the difference between fact and fiction. And my mother would always say, if you write it down, it's a story. If it comes out your mouth, it's a lie. So she got me into the habit of just writing down and letting my imagination take over.
And who are some of the authors that you've read that have inspired you to follow that passion?
So I'm an avid reader. I read some of everything. I love discovering new writers. Of course, my first love came from Maya Angelou. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. But then I also remember all the Judy Blume. My favorite was Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. But now I read historical fiction a lot. I love historical fiction, but then I love suspense. So I'm a big Freda McFadden fan and John Grisham. So read a little bit of everything.
And can you talk about, you read in multiple genres, but it's another thing to write in multiple genres. There's certainly a specific science and craft to each one. Can you talk about learning how to write in different genres and kind of switching from one to another?
Yeah. So, when I was writing mainstream fiction and then I would write teen fiction, I actually had to get a teen advisory board because I quickly learned that I wasn't as cool as I thought I was because I was writing in my teen book, oh, that's the bomb. And the kids were like, nobody says the bomb anymore. So I know when to go and get help on what I'm writing. And even with historical fiction, it's a challenge. I pay attention to every single word, making sure that it is true to the time. I do a lot of research on when words originated. And so that's why I see myself just sticking in this. I don't see how you can do historical fiction and a whole bunch of other genres. Maybe it just takes me a longer time to do the research. But really, I like to stick to this genre now. In the past, I would do both, but this one is a little bit harder to navigate, multiple genres.
And you're a very accomplished, successful author of many awards I won't list now. Tell me about what it's been like for you to achieve that success. And then also, I'm curious, where do you go from here after having accomplished so much already?
Well, I have a long way to go. I'm very honored to have won all of the awards that I have because, it's a recognition of my literary talents. But my biggest reward comes from hearing from readers. That's who I write for. And so I love to hear, their comments that this book touched me, this book opened my eyes, and I get a lot of that. But from here, I hope to just continue writing and grow my audience. That's one of the things I'm hoping I can do with The Queen of Sugar Hill is grow my audience. And of course, I'd love to see this as a series that can grow a whole other audience for people that don't read as much and prefer their Netflix series. But, I just will continue to do this and hope that people continue to read.
Well, I publish historical fiction. I read historical fiction almost exclusively. So I can say already that this is one more reader that you might not have had if you didn't move into historical fiction.
Yes, I'm getting a lot of that. And if I'm, as I'm a journalist and I'm out promoting, I know how the media works. And there are more people that are interested in Hattie's story than just some made up person. And so that's one of the things I love about historical fiction is all of the people saying, I had no idea. A lot of people had no idea she was even involved in restrictive covenants and had anything to do with the fact that they can now live where they want to live. So I love opening eyes to those type of things.
You talked about being a full-time writer, and that includes a lot of public speaking. Can you tell us, you know, what you do for your public speaking and how that helps contribute to your work as an author and a journalist?
Yeah, so I do a lot of public speaking. I am a motivational speaker and an award-winning poet, so I love to do all of that. But one of the biggest tips I can tell people is to know your audience. You'll see people sometimes reading. If I'm reading or I'm talking and the audience doesn't seem engaged, then you shift. I see a lot of speakers that they'll just keep going because this is what I practice, this is what I plan. But you have to be able to engage your audience. And that's one of the things that keeps people coming back and referring you and having recommendations on why you should come speak. And so that's a big thing, is to know your audience and just really imagine you were sitting in the audience and wanted to hear. So that's the type of thing I deliver. I deliver the things that I would love to hear.
I find it kind of interesting what you just said, because I do a bit of public speaking myself, and it's gotten to the point where I don't have to think about the words. I'm watching the audience. Are they nodding off? Are they reacting to what I'm saying? It's kind of a weird way to see what you're doing in real time.
Right. And it tells you what works and what doesn't for the next time.
Can you tell us a little bit about your family life and how you balance your family with your work?
Yeah, so I am the mother of three children. They are not impressed at all with what I do until their friends are. So my daughter, my oldest daughter, was just always blasé about my writing. But then she called me super excited one day because they had gone to the library as a class, and all her friends were marveling because I had a whole row of my teen books. So now she's taking pictures with the book and sharing with all her friends. But I'm like, it's books in the house that you won't even pick up and read. But now she's excited because the friends thought it was cool. But my middle child actually took after me. She has two books, so she loves to write. So she, both of them are in college now, but they love to write. My youngest son, he's the jokester of the family. He tried to write and it was taking too long, so he made all his words 72-point font, thinking that would make the book thicker. But finally, he gave it up. And then my husband is very, very supportive of what I do.
And what advice do you have for young writers that want to kind of follow in your path and enjoy that kind of success and be writers full time?
So a couple of things. One, every minute you spend talking about what you don't have time to do could be spent doing it. So you'll see a lot of people that say, well, I have A, B, C, D, E to do. I don't have time to write. In order to write and finish your books, your desire to write has to become greater than your resistance. And so that means you will find a way to make time for whatever it is you really want to do. So that's one of the biggest barriers. And then the other is, if you can't go in through the front door, find another way in. I initially was self-published because I was rejected left and right from when I sent out my initial manuscript. And so I self-published, and then I figured out how to think outside the box and get my book into the hands of people. And it caught a buzz and that caught the attention of an agent who signed me a book deal. And here I am later, 54 books later.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And what are you working on next?
So I'm excited to stay in the historical fiction realm. I am working on a book on Hazel Scott. Now, Hazel was a world-renowned jazz singer. She was married to Adam Clayton Powell, who was a very popular congressman. But people don't know about Hazel Scott because she was all but erased from history because she was deemed a communist. And she was bigger than Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, many of the great jazz people. And because she spoke out about rights, civil rights, she was deemed a communist and also all but banned from the country. And so her story is fascinating. I'm lost in her life and in Harlem and the whole era of the Renaissance. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it sounds great. Do you have an idea of a release date for that?
We don't have a release date yet, but sometime in late 2025.
Well, Rashonda, thanks so much for joining me. Congratulations on the Queen of Sugar Hill, and thank you so much for sharing Hattie's story.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.